Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 181, I was very lucky to have Aaron Young on the podcast today. He is a business developer, a personal developer for his organization, Catalyst Coaching. We talked about a number of things on the podcast today. How he ended up doing a two-time stint in prison in Africa. What was some of the things what led to some life-changing like thoughts for him, where he basically went from being like an iron will to more of a like reed blowing in the wind mindset, and how how he basically looks at the world today with regards to the world, the realms of personal development, growth for individuals out there. I have to say it was a joy to speak to him, a joy to talk to him, and yeah, I look forward to having a conversation with him in the future. But yes, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast, take a longer moment to listen to this episode, and enjoy, my friends, my life warriors. Have a great day, be awesome, peace. Haha. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 181, I'm lucky to have Aaron Young on the show. He is a business and personal development coach, you could say, life coach, as you will. Let's just say he has had an interesting life journey, to say the least. Like, the only thing which I think is missing off the list at this present time is alien abduction, or like, yes, or like seducing a mermaid. We're not too sure. Those are the two things I would say. But yes, Aaron, how are you today, sir?
I thought I'm good. And it's really nice to be on a show that has such an incredibly vibrant and energetic host. Because sometimes they get a little bit boring. And you've certainly, from the second I jumped on here, made this something that I'm really looking forward to and I'm excited about. Thank you.
Yeah, well, why thank you. Look, I've been sending out a number of checks where compliments have come in, like yourself. But I've been like telling people, not until 2025, do not cash these checks. Well, maybe 2070. No, let's just go with 2022. Yeah, I'll be somewhere else. So who knows? Yay, but that's another story. But yeah, I have to ask, how on earth did you get involved in business development, personal development, life coach? How did you get this started?
How did I get it started? I had no choice. I was forced, basically. So when I got back to Australia after being gone for 15 years, I didn't come back by choice, as we know. I came back with a gun at my back. When I landed, I started looking for a job. And I had 15 years of what I thought was pretty cool and radical experience. The problem was 10 years of it was chasing elephants and lions around the African bush. And so, you know, Australia and first world bureaucracy would have it that my CV wouldn't even be looked at twice. So I just couldn't get a job. The guy with my experience in the past couldn't get a job.
Because look, you went out to like Africa to like help with the elephants, right?
I ended up doing that. I didn't go there for it. I did like I did most of my life. I followed a woman to Africa.
Okay. There you go.
And then by accident became an elephant behavior expert and a predator expert. Wow. Yeah.
come with me to Africa. Okay. Yeah, you're pretty. There you go.
That's pretty much the story of my life up until like 10 years ago. That's what I used to do. Mm. Whether it was Asia, whether it was the Middle East, that's what I did.
Right. It's just one of those things that when I was reading through your bio, it is kind of like, okay, you went to Africa, you've been to prison twice, you've stood up to the man in like Africa, you've come back, you're doing your person, you've got a lot going on. I'm a little bit stumped here to like, which way should I go with this? So this is the reason why I was like, hey, how did you get the one thing? I'm like, look, there is a story and a tale how you got mixed up with all of that side of things. I'm not, this is the reason why I go, look, tell me about like business and personal development. I just need to start there first, just to like get a baseline on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was what it was. I didn't have much of a choice. I didn't want to pack stack shelves, which is probably about the only job I could have taken. And someone presented a course to me, which was life coaching. Now, I'd had a business in mind for 25 years, and funnily enough, it was life coaching. Now, don't ask me why and where. These one of those things that, you know, you're 20 years old, and I thought, you know what? I've had an incredible life so far at 20. I'm 47 now. At 20, but it just never came about, and I really never thought, honestly, in my 40s it would happen. And with a life experience set like mine, the best thing you can do with it is actually help inspire others. It really is. You don't get the life I've had and then really waste it.
Yeah, no, because like this is the thing I would say with regards to like a life that there are lives which are lived in comfort, and there are lives which are, how can I say, they seem to flirt, well, they go into the realms of discomfort, and then there are lives which like, yeah, just go on the sort of a little bit, a tad bit extreme, let's just say. And like I would say you have had a life which is, yeah, a tad bit extreme. And like, yeah, because okay, look, if you came to me at 20 and went, yeah, I'm your life coach and everything like this, I'm like, yeah, you know what, buddy, go away and live some life and then maybe come back. But you did, yeah, you kind of went through the ringer at the age of 20 before that as well.
Yeah, that's I guess the beautiful thing, isn't it? Is at 20 I could have life coached. At 20 I was already an expert in childhood trauma and being abducted at the age of 5. You know, mum tried to take me off the planet at one point, and you know, and at 20 I'd already, yeah, I mean, I had all those experiences.
Yeah.
But the truth was, could I have coached someone successfully back then? No, because I was full of ego and full of myself. I was incredibly arrogant, not very humble. I needed to live, but like as you put it, I really chose the extreme path. I didn't take it easy. And it's funny you use the word ease and comfort, because that's one of my catch lines. I think that the world, especially men at the moment, have got it way too easy and way too comfortable. I'm not advocating doing what I did. Anyone, don't follow my life path. But what I am saying is that we're built for challenge. We don't seek it out often enough, because when we're challenged, we grow.
Not because like this is like you'll get, and I'm like playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, like you'll get a number of guys like going, look man, we've got it hard out here, look, going out there, work, yeah, like trying to find a significant other, like that's, you know what I mean, like having that significant other, like just being like, yeah, trying to be the father I need to be and everything like this. How dare you, like, you know what I mean, come at me and go, I've got it easy. You know what I mean, like what would you say?
Well, I would say to you that unless you've spent as many years as I have in the South Pacific, Asia and Africa, you need to think again, because it's not an insult to say you've got it easy. It's a society that's been built and developed to be easy. It's not your fault. It's not me pointing the finger at you with arrogance going, oh, you're a pussy, you know, you haven't taken the hard road. It's a fact of the matter is that society we have demanded is full of ease. I mean, you don't have to leave your bloody desk. You can get food. You know what I mean? Everything is delivered to you. And these things breed this idea that we don't actually have to stretch ourselves anymore. You know? You don't have to go and chase elephants and lions around. It's not that type of discomfort. I'm not telling people to go and be stupid, you know, you have to skydive. This is about your challenges in your daily life, the things that pop up that are difficult for you that, you know, I'm going to have a beer because I can't be arsed dealing with that. Or, you know, I'm going to stay in this shitty job for 10 years and keep bitching about it instead of doing something about it. These are the challenges I talk about more so when I'm talking about you sort of every day.
Yeah. No, there is. There's this old story where, like, yeah, a man, like, walks past the porch, like, with, like, an old lady on the porch and a dog next to her. And the dog's like, like, man looks, thinks nothing of it and keeps walking past. This, like day two, he walks past and same lady still sitting there, dog still. It's like, and like still thinks nothing of it. And then on day three, yeah, same scenario. And it's like, yeah. And the guy goes, excuse me, miss, what is wrong with your dog? It keeps making this howling noise time and time again. Don't you fret, she goes. The dog's just laying on the nail. And it's just basically when he gets tired of it, he'll eventually get up and move. It's just, yeah. Up 3 days. Yeah. I think that's where a lot of people sometimes like live their lives. They live on that nail, like time and time again, whining, complaining. And like, this is a thing, wasting a lot of energy before sort of like truly acting. And like, I understand where that inaction comes from in many respects, you know, like it's not easy because that big fear monster, which is quite tiny at times, comes into play, you know?
Yeah, and it's change. We fear change. It's sadly built into, again, it's a societal thing. And this is the problem with it, is there's very few people beside us taking action as well. Mm. And so we tend to look to others. We're connected beings, you know? We look at other people and we don't see them taking action, so that we do the same thing. So this is why it's not really a one-guy problem. It's not pointing at a guy and saying, you're at fault. It's more of us as a society. We've just really gotten lazy. And the truth is, this isn't a politician's fault or a president's or a prime minister. It's our fault.
Mm.
We own our lives and we own our choices. You can't even blame COVID. You can't. We still have some ability to make a choice. Yeah, we throw that away very quickly in this day and age. So, and that's when I talk about challenge, that's what I'm talking about. When you throw away your choices every day, you need to start having a look at the challenges in your life. And like I said, put the beer back, have it on the weekend, or change the job. You know, find your courage again.
Yeah. So like, with that said, like, what would you say would be some of the actions, some of the steps people can sort of like, you know what I mean, start taking to like win that back? You mentioned putting the beer away, like changing your job, but you know what I mean, before doing those sort of, well, maybe not the beer, but like, yeah, before changing the job, say, or changing the lifestyle, what would you say would be some of the foundation stones you would say put into place?
Oof, geez, it depends on how far they want to go. I mean, for me, you know, the first thing I give to people, and this is going to seem a little bit out of left field because it's like it's not going to sound related, but bear with me. The first thing is gratitude. And that is, you put it very succinctly when you just said, we sit on that nail, whinging, bitching, moaning. We struggle to see outside of our blinkers or our comfort zone when we're stuck in that negativity. When you start to be grateful for what you've got, your blinkers fly off, man, and you start looking at the world as a very different place. So for me, the foundation for any work, I won't work with someone if they don't do gratitude. If they won't work it the way I teach them, I don't, because once gratitude is there, is it in place, and there's a daily habit, like a muscle, you work that thing, my God, everything just changes. Yeah, because now you're a force for good. You're walking around giving. Whereas when you bitch and when you moan, you're taking. You become parasitic. You know, and you attract that very same thing. Your negativity breeds negativity, and you have more of that coming. When you're grateful, opportunities present themselves. Now, I don't ask me how, the science, the magic, whatever you want to call it, universe, God, whatever you're comfortable with. When we give off that vibe, when we become truly grateful for the things that we have in our lives, things shift.
Would you say those opportunities are always there, but when you have that sort of gratitude, like the let's just use that thing, blinkers, like, are off. So it's like, the opportunities there, but like when you sort of go at it with like, yeah, like that mindset of like, no, why is life treating me so bad? Like, you just fail to see that opportunity. Yeah, I can't find that right person, and that like there might be a lass or like a guy just sitting next to them, also like going, hey, I'm free and single, like, hey, I'm ready to mingle, but because they've got in that sort of place, they never see it.
Yeah, I think it's a very good way of putting it. I think that the opportunity is always there. I call them miracles. I teach people the idea of miracles. We're surrounded by them all the time. We've been raised to believe a miracle is like, you know, a Lamborghini or $1 million or winning the lottery or something huge.
Yeah.
And the thing is, what we fail to realize is every single day you wake up, you're just surrounded by miracles. And when you start to become grateful for them, like you said, you could change that word miracle to opportunity, because every day it is. You know, you could look at someone and smile the right way, and it's that butterfly effect that then shifts the entire day's opportunities in front of you. You know, just lift your head up and walk, looking at people in the eyes you go down the street. Watch how many people do that in a modern society, especially with the amount of fear that we're being bombarded with. You become the man who stands there looking up like that, and you watch the world completely start to change around you.
Yeah. Like with another famous person who said it, yeah, be the change you want to be, like, see in the world. I'm quoting Gandhi there. I'm not trying to plagiarize the man. Look, but yeah. I think with many of the things sort of in today's society, yeah, we have seen a sort of prolonged bombardment of, yeah, what, like, the world is a bad place. The world is not a good place. And I would say this time last year, when John Krasinski was doing his Some Good News thing, it was like so refreshing to all of the sort of thing what was going on in the world. And it was like, oh yeah, wait, there is like good things going on. There are positive things going on, but it's where the media wanted to take us. I'm not a media phobe or anything like that. It's just, that's the game they play. That's their business model, you know?
That's their business. It's part of the system. You know, they want us scared because in a scared state, we're much easier to sort of drive in a certain direction. We take up the herd mentality.
Mm.
We need individuals again. You know, yeah. We need that strength of character where you're prepared to stand up. And it doesn't have to be a warring sort of mentality. You don't have to go to war with people and pick a side. Like you with COVID at the moment, you've got vax, anti-vax. It doesn't have to be that militant sort of I'm right, you're wrong. It means someone who's prepared to stand tall in their own stability, their own peace. It's about throwing your arms around, pulling your chest out and looking like a big man. It's about being a man, stable, peaceful, being able to respect someone else's opinion without wanting to batter them. You know, that is actually what we need more of, because at the moment, the fear wants us angry.
Windy Pops couldn't help it. It's like, yeah, just like took me on there. It's like, no. What I would simply say is I think there is a lot of space for people which, I think a lot of people have stopped working on themselves over the course of time. It's just like being on cruise control, not sort of like going, hey, who am I? And like, that is a question which it should take some time to answer. You can't really and when you sort of hit certain ages, that question sometimes changes extremely, you know?
Yeah, but, and it's challenge based, because when your back's against the wall, you learn more about yourself in 15 seconds than you will in 15 years. If you sat at home and you've gone into the grind of day in, day out, work pub, get married, have 2.4 kids, work pub, and you do that in 15 years, and all of a sudden you have a car accident and life flashes before your eyes. In that 15 seconds of your life flashing before your eyes, you'll have learned more about yourself than you did in the previous 15 years. Now, again, I'm not going to say go and have a car accident. This is not, I'm giving extremes just because people can relate sometimes to, they've heard these stories before about people going, bang, this doesn't have to be this big. It can be the fact that you want a new job, you hate your job, but you don't want to leave till you find something new. No bullshit, just quit. Put yourself out on a ledge and watch how motivated you become when there's no check coming. You will create and move mountains. Yeah, and this is the reality with when I say challenges. They don't have to be near-death experiences. They just need to be what's uncomfortable for you. Go at it. What's uncomfortable? Go at it again. Every time you defeat a challenge, you learn about your fortitude, your resilience, your ability, where your weaknesses are. What are you good at? What are you not good at? You see what I mean? You're not going to find that out sitting still.
Yeah. Like, this is the thing. Yeah, I hear that. And like, the whole thing is, one of the hardest things people find is building that sort of momentum, like getting that going. Like, look, when people hear, I know some people, when they hear you, like, yeah, just quit your job. Like, what? Just quit my job? Are you crazy? Are you out of your freaking mind? You can't quit your job. I don't need to hear this shit right now from you. It's like, but how will momentum ever be built? Like, because,
the thing is, you can wait. As a human, we know enough about human nature to know, you know what the ideal thing is to do. So this is the ideal thing that you would say to us. And this is what we've been saying for 40 years is go to night school, learn a trade, you know, up base your skills, go out in the world and work for free in a shop. Humans don't do that. So the problem is we've been living in this bizarre reality where we go with all these beautiful ideals, which is go and do this and go, people don't do it. And so this is why I am the extreme master who says quit your job. Because if you don't light a fire under your ass, you're going to be you'll be talking this same conversation for 5 more years. Yeah. And people can argue with me. Oh, and I go, how long have you been sitting there talking about the same thing? And what have you done about it? And so I do advocate a little bit of extreme nudge. And that is why I'm a different type of coach, because I will push people. I won't say quit your job, but I'll push them right to the edge. Until they literally realize they've got two choices. Stop working with me or take the leap of faith. Because there's one thing we've forgotten is that we are way more capable than we give ourselves credit for. We rely way too much on bureaucracy and systems. Man, I put myself in situations which were extreme, many of them. I never failed to come out alive. I never failed to come out not learning something. And I never failed most of the time to come out with my integrity and morals intact, actually giving back to the world around me. Mm. And once I kept that motivation, you know, I was able to continue to learn and grow.
Mm. Yeah, like this is like one of the lines that there's this, well, when he was alive, there's a guy called Greg Plett. He was the body double. If you've watched The Watchmen, he was a body double for Dr. Manhattan. So he's been, guy was ripped and One of the things he said a lot was, everyone jaw jack talks intent and basically doesn't take any sort of action. It's being caught in that sort of game. And it's really weird because, when you talk intent and don't act on the intentions, like, it is amazing how quickly time just sort of slips by. It's like, 1 year, 5 years.
And you set yourself up for failure, because what happens when you do that to yourself is in the back of your mind, every time you don't take action, there's a little voice in your head that says failure, failure, failure. You are accountable to yourself, ultimately, your God, your universe, your whatever you're comfortable with, that thing inside you that is driving the bus, so to speak. You're accountable to that. And every time you talk smack and you sit there and say, I'm going to, and you don't, there's this little bit of thing either in guilt and shame that pops up inside your head, and you weigh yourself down with this shit. And if you don't learn to clear it, eventually what happens is you stop talking because you realize that you're not going to take action. And that's when you start to slowly die. And that's when you start getting sick. This is why we age and die at the age we do. We're capable of living much healthier lives for a lot longer, but life starts to weigh us down. And the bulk of those weighing us down moments are created by one person, and that's ourselves, not the rest of the world. Yes, look, the world can be a really hectic place sometimes. It can be really difficult. But the truth is, man, we're all given the same opportunities in the first world. I can't say that of the third world, but in the first world, we're all given relatively the same opportunities. Some it's much tougher, but then those people are better. So if you come from an underprivileged area and you succeed, well, man, you're a fucking warrior. So it's not a negative. You do it better than everyone else because you've been given the school of hard knocks. You take that school of hard knocks as a blessing, not as a negative. I could have taken my childhood and could have worn it and I'd be a junkie and I'd be in prison now. We can't, man. We were blessed. The people who got it tough when they were young were given a gift. And there's not enough people talking about teaching it to them. You take that bad thing that happened and you turn that into a positive and you light that fire with it and you move forward. That's where you get your momentum from. So that's why I say with people who've had struggling upbringings or, you know, poor, you know, trauma-based youth, they're superhuman. It's just not enough people out there telling them that and supporting them through it.
I would say with regards to sort of like, not teaching people, like the whole thing is, I think in like the first world, the developed world, however you want to call it, there is this sort of, I think we've fallen into this sort of a bizarre trap where we like, because we want to sort of protect the next generation coming up, we kind of like, how can I put it? Put them in a cookie cutter, and then basically after they've come out, it's like, you're all the same. Like, don't you worry. There you go. You're the same. Like, two eyes, like little side, and do that. And then we wrap it up in cotton wool and go, the world shouldn't hurt you. The world can't do this, shouldn't do this to you. And like, we've made it very simple for a lot of people when it should be like, hey, you you're not all the same. You are unique individuals, and like your life experience compared to someone else's life experience may be very extremely different to what they are. So yeah, and you're not all going to start from like the same spot. Like some people are going to be financially like way better off than you. Some people are going to be way worse than you. Some people are just going to be stronger than you. And like, look, you need to sort of like, yeah, get into the mix and like use the skills you've got to like get yourself going. Because if you don't, you'll find yourself in trouble. And I think there's a lot of people this day and age, because they haven't worked on those skills, get like basically they have fallen behind and now they're trying to catch up, but they don't have those tools and they can't, and there's part of them what can't be asked to get those tools to get better.
And then they become victims.
Mm.
And that's that trap, and that's what happens. And I mean, it's happened to me in my life where you get to a point where literally you give up, and then what happens when you give up is you become a victim. Then you start saying, poor me, life is against me. Life is too hard. There is no hope. I had times like that sitting in an African prison rotting away, you know. But the reality is it wasn't true.
Mm.
Prison was just another learning experience for me, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, how did you end up in an African prison? Like, hey, look, okay, look, ending up in an African prison once, okay, that's unlucky. Ended up in an African prison twice. What? It's like, yeah, how did that sort of like, yeah, how did that occur, man? It's like,
yeah, look, it's relatively simple. I got a big mouth. And when I was in conservation working with elephants and lions, I was quite well known by the president's office and, you know, CIO and all these people. But I was quite well respected because I wasn't an egomaniac. So everything I did, I literally put someone local forward. So I would do the work, and I wasn't in it for the credit. So I was let be. But then I decided to go farming. I had two children at this point, and conservation pays no money. You do it as a labor of love. So I went farming, which pays very well if you're good at it. And I'd never done it before, but I found it very quickly. I was very good at it.
Uh-huh.
The problem was, it wasn't my farm. I was farming for a couple of gentlemen, both who I later found out were quite crooked, which isn't unusual in Africa, because pretty much most businessmen in Africa are crooked. That's just the nature of the beast.
No, stop that.
Sadly, it's the corruption. It's just the way the system works. And these are two white guys. So we're not talking, this has got nothing to do with.
This is
two white guys. And they were crooked. You know, one was a drug addict. Another one was just a crooked businessman. And I got embroiled in their junk. And there were families involved. And I went to war on the side of what was right. I went to war on the side of what was right for the staff who were looking to lose their jobs. And I took over this farm and I turned a profit instantly. But I also have a problem with corruption and theft. In Africa, one thing that's quite common, especially in Zimbabwe, was this idea of acceptable theft or acceptable loss. And I didn't agree with it. So I stopped it and I stopped the corruption. So no bribes were paid at this point. And so the local politicians who were being paid quite handsomely didn't like me very much, and I made a lot of noise about the fact that I was not prepared to pay them, because I wanted to rebuild the model farm. I wanted Zimbabweans to say, we don't have to put up with the corruption anymore. We don't need to live like this. It's not acceptable. It's not an acceptable way to survive. But the problem is, African politics turns very quickly. So I went up, and then one day, you know, someone passed away, the president. And politicians that were up now came down, and vice versa. And the guys at the top came after me. So I was put in into prison. I wasn't put into prison initially. They tried to break me. They wanted me to leave the country. So they gave me a good couple of days of, how would you say, trying to motivate me to leave, which I refused because my kids were still there. Then after 2 days, I realized I wasn't going to break. So they then charged me, booked me into prison, managed to bribe my way out of prison. So yeah, just shy of Christmas 2018, I got out of prison, and I went to court. I fought them on the charges for 9 months. I bribed all and sundry. So here was me, Mr. Anti-Corruption, all of a sudden now Mr. Pro-Corruption, trying to save my ass. Bribing magistrates, bribing public prosecutors, bribing every single person under the sun, because I wasn't leaving my kids, not for nothing. Sadly, my solicitor was as corrupt as the rest of them. And on the day of sentencing, I was supposed to walk free. And he hadn't been paying the bribes to hardly anyone. He'd been pocketing the money. So instead of going home to my kids, I went back to prison again. And this time, not so lucky. So, yeah, they wanted like 3 months. And then after the 3 months were served, they wanted 10 years. So, yeah. So, which I was prepared to fight initially. I was like, I'll fight them in from in here. I got no problem. I've done it once. I'll do it again. But then people started visiting me in prison. More specifically, the mother of my children came and visited me. And when she saw me, what I was dressed in, you could say dressed, and it was winter, she just burst into tears. And after that visit, she left, and they started to build up a movement outside of prison to have me deported instead. So they entered a plea with immigration. Someone paid a chunk of money. And instead of doing my time, I was put on a plane and sent back to Australia. And that was September of 2019. But I didn't like it here because I wasn't an Australian anymore. So I flew back to Africa 6 weeks later into a country called Mozambique on the eastern border with Zimbabwe. And then I illegally jumped the border so I could go say bye to my kids. And then illegally jumped it back again. You didn't. I don't put that in my bio. I talk about it freely, but your bio is only so much. So that one's a bit of a sneak bit. I'll leave.
Well, yeah, like yeah, you put that in your bio. I was like, okay, yeah, like wow. It's like going, yeah. Like that is crazy. It's like what? Like I know. I'm not. This is being the circumstances is crazy. Like yeah, being deported, then yeah, coming back, and then yeah, jumping the border to say goodbye to your kid. Don't get me wrong, that's far from the yeah stuff. But like, yeah, but also it's kind of like, you're crazy. Because
and it was. And when I got back there, I'd done one border crossing to get a visa. And at that border crossing, these guys saw through me and realized I was doing a visa run, which is illegal in most African countries. And I realized my time in Africa was done because these guys started threatening to put me in prison. And this was in Malawi. So this is in the middle of the back of nowhere. And I lost it and started getting abusive. And I'd never done that. I'd always been a very calm person in Africa, so I'd always succeeded.
Yeah.
So when I crossed into Zimbabwe illegally, I realized very quickly that I was entering dangerous ground again. I had no patience left anymore. I wasn't that calm person I was. And, you know, even though I got to say goodbye to my kids because they were so young, they don't even know about prison. My kids don't know any of this. All they think is daddy went to the bush to help rhinos and then he had to go to Australia because there was a political problem. So I crossed that border, yeah, and then getting there, sitting there, realizing if I got picked up, yeah, that was probably a good 10, 20 years they would throw me in for.
Yeah.
But I wasn't not going to do it. I wouldn't change it for the world. I had to see my kids. They were just, they're young. You know, they were five and three.
But would you say, okay, your character and stuff like this, when it comes to most, like most things, you kind of got, You kind of go at an iron will type situation.
Yeah, yeah, I do. I think my early childhood had its blessings and its curses. And one of them, I saw death very early in life. Mm. So I was this bulletproof, you know, I'm going to, you know, I probably won't live till I'm 25. So the attitude was just go at it full hog. Yeah. When I realized I wasn't and I started to study spirituality and all these other bits and pieces, I realized how capable I was. But I was still addicted to pressure situations. So the truth was I was feeding off these situations and it's probably why I created a lot of them. Not consciously, but subconsciously, I was attracting a lot of this junk because the truth was I was addicted to the chaos of the moment, you know, and it took these experiences and it took that last one crossing that border for the last time for me to finally realize that what I was slowly doing, I was not probably going to die quickly because I seemed to be able to dodge that one, but I was slowly destroying myself.
Well, it's a case of yeah, like if you did if you did get caught 20 years, it's a case of yes, you might be indestructible, you might be that, like the Captain Scarlet, I don't know if you get that reference, but they're like basically indestructible, like super spy. Yeah, but like it comes down to yeah, they just take your time. There was this episode of Supernatural where the US government captured like Sam and Dean Winchester. I don't know if you watch Supernatural yourself. No. Yeah. Like Yeah, America, like these guys have been tortured by demons. They've gone through hell and back. Like they've seen like what you could see as the worst thing you could see in the universe and stuff like this. And US government captured them and they put them in a cell. They don't talk to them. They don't interact with them. They like anything what would sort of like give them that sort of juice, they just take it away. And they kept them there for a month and they were kind of, in solitary, just like what the hell? That type of situation, which you could have easily fallen into, nah, that's not good, man. That's not good at all. Not.
No, it's not, and not in a prison that hadn't been cleaned in 40 years. Like, you know, when you think of what a prison could possibly look like, I don't know if I can really describe it. I've really never tried to, because I guess that you can't. And also, you're in a country that's probably third poorest in the world. The bulk of your criminals are there for one of two things, and that's either minor, very petty theft, or rape. You know, so you're in an incredibly depraved environment with a lot of young kids stealing a loaf of bread to stay alive, surrounded by a bunch of really devastatingly sick and twisted human beings. And it's all remembering, you know, we're in Africa, it's all based on very tribal lines. So, you know, you're not talking about countries and any of this colonial shit. It's all based on tribal stuff. So, you know, you click up very quickly. And I still wouldn't change it, but it's certainly not something I would ever wish on people long term, because you're right, I wouldn't have survived. If I'd had to do more than probably 2 years, I think I'd end up, if not dead, very sick, because it just, you know, white man is not as strong as an African in any environment, let alone in a prison. We just don't have the same strength, resilience. We just don't. It's a simple reality. No.
So, would you say you've like gone from now being sort of iron willed to more like the flexible reed in the wind?
Yeah, very much so. And it's a very good way. It's that whole analogy of bamboo. Because, yeah, I was rigid and I'd get knocked over. I'd just go replant myself. You know what I mean? I kept doing that, kept doing it. And I never learned my lesson. And that's the difference with that flexible reed or the bamboo, is I learn from my lessons now. Before, I pretended to, and my ego was telling me that I was this all knowledgeable and I was learning every time I made a mistake. And the truth was, I was just repeating them in a different environment. And it took the separation of my children, because my children are still stuck back in Africa. You know, I came back and then COVID hit, and now their mother is refusing to come here. So I lost my kids. And when that happened, that's when the ball game changed for me. Everything, absolutely everything, turned upside down on its head. Because what I also realized is that even though I'd got my shit together probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and my kids saw a very good version of who I was as a man, this addiction to chaos and this addiction to, and this junk, the negativity I was bringing in towards myself, was an example that I was setting for them. Now, it doesn't matter that I was a crusader for integrity and anti-corruption and that I was helping elephants and lions. That actually didn't matter, because what I was also showing them was it was never good to sit still. It was never good to actually slowly self-analyze. My idea of growth back then was to continue learning, keep learning, keep learning, keep learning, keep learning, keep doing, keep doing, keep doing. See, for me, what I've come down to now is it's simple actions. You must slow down and go silent to learn. And then when you identify the challenge, then you take action into it. You just don't take 1,000 actions and hope one of them will stick. And that's what I was doing. It was just act, 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 learn, 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 act, act, act. So what I was doing was just basically running in circles, dog chasing his tail. I acquired a lot of knowledge, but it took me 47 years. A lot of wasted years.
Well, like this is the thing that you could say there were wasted years if you thus I went like you kept on going down the same path. Yeah, by all means, they are very much wasted years. But like the whole thing is like, yeah, it took two prison stints, like basically a flight back, jumping the border, almost getting caught while jumping the border, coming back, and now basically today, yeah, like your kids might be in Africa still, and like yeah, you're away from them, but you took a lot of growth over that period of time. Because look, if you didn't, you would if you were sitting here having this conversation, it might be under sort of very sort of different circumstances, you know?
Yeah, we would. And the truth is you're exactly right. And this is where you see the last of my hurdles on my journey. Is this separation with my children still something I struggle with daily? See, for me to use a phrase like wasted years, I would never, ever have said that unless my kids are involved. And the truth is I still wake up every day. I'm not some perfect human who has all the answers. I still wake up every day grieving for the loss of my ability to parent and guide and support my kids through their early years. So I still have problems. And I don't wake up always having the answers to solve them. Mm. And I think that that's also one of the powers that I've got is this ability to be honest about my mistakes. You know, and for me, that is one that I still struggle with daily. This idea that, you know, I somehow could have made a different choice at a different time and my children would have their father with them. But we both, I can't go back. Well, so what I deal with is what I've got right here, right now. And that's why I'm talking to you. Mm. Because part of my journey is to help people. And if I can do that while I'm not able to help my kids the way I want to, it's this next best thing.
Yeah, no, I hear you. But even if you could go back, if you could erase that thing which you consider like a wrong turn, a mistake and everything like this, honestly, it like with that, and I'm like, this is the thing. I love movies like sort of Back to the Future and time travel. Like, yeah, if you could change it and stuff like this, like from a younger mindset, it's like, yeah, but with the mistakes you've made and the errors which have gone, like maybe not gone your way and everything like this, that's where the growth and wisdom truly lives. And like without those, you will be slightly less wise. And basically you've not picked up that lesson. So that is going to happen to you at some point in time.
Inevitable, and who knows. And the truth was, I wouldn't be helping people. And you know, like I said to you earlier, at 20, I had this idea that at some point I was going to be helping people. Now, I thought it was going to be young men. I thought that was going to be my ability was to help young kids. And it took me another 27 years to actually get back to that place. And so I wouldn't change any of it because I wouldn't be able to help people as well as I do. Yeah, one thing these life experiences have taught me is that with my humility and the grace in which I see life, if I can help that rub off onto a few different people around me, the world becomes a better place. And I'm tired of looking at the news and at politicians and watching people blame all of these people above us for what's going on. Because we talk about society, we are society, us. Politicians, like I said before, don't dictate what choices I make every day. They don't tell me what type of man I'm going to be. I choose that regardless of who's running whatever country. And so for me, this idea is that I can use these experiences to teach men, especially because I've started to realize that men have just, I think they've just been abandoned. They've been vilified and blamed for so much. I think it's time they actually just stood tall. Remember why we're here for. And that is because we're supposed to be the stable ones. Like men of peace.
Yeah. With that vilification, would you give a couple of examples, say?
Well, the obvious one is the battle of the sexes. So basically what happened is men trod all over women for so many years. Women decided to go on a revolution and demand their power. They earned back their rights, you know what I mean? The rights that they probably should have been given. The problem was is post that revolution, men were battered. So now every time a man stands up and wants to be strong as a man, he's got to be very cautious that there isn't a woman. They're saying, no, you're not going back to the old way. We're equal to you. It's not about equality. Men and women are different. See, so women fought so strong and so hard to push that they've demanded all this power and they've got it. Now men sort of sit there going, what do we do now? Are we allowed to stand strong anymore? Because in this generation that are stuck in this quandary, they didn't create the problems of 40 years ago. So they should be able to come back and rise tall and stand tall, but they're scared. Yeah, so they literally just sit back.
What I would simply say is I would say there are a lot of men, and I would say the vast majority of men in like the Western society, the developed world, which are kind of now a little bit confused where they kind of sit in that realm. Because look, if we went with the old school ideals, like you are the man, you go out there and you work and you bring back that bread. You give it to your little lady and she will like take care of the house and like you'll sit there with your pipe your martini. Child one, child two. Why do you say that? I don't know your name. Oh, papa. All that type of stuff. But the whole thing is, it's like, okay, like there are a lot of ladies which these days, yeah, they make more money than most men out there. And it's like, yeah, are you the breadwinner? Is that what you're meant to be? Or are you just there for like support? Or are you meant to be that sort of like, yeah, big hero type leading the way, like doing the charge into a burning building?
We're driving it off achievements. And so this is something that I learned the hard way, was that we're defining people on what they achieve, not on who they are. Yeah, our society demands achievement. All right. And I still fall into this trap every now and then. You know, I go, get a D job, stop helping people. You know, you could be making a lot more money if you went and put a suit back on. The reality is that's not what my destiny is. But this idea of chasing achievements, of money, which is an incredible one. I mean, look at the way most of the developed world is set up now. You can't even own a home until both parents are working.
Yeah.
So the truth is, even if she earns more or he earns less, really it doesn't matter, because now what's happening is that child's not being raised by a parent. So the problem for me is not necessarily who's chasing the money, it's who's raising the kids. And why have we now got society's extreme disconnection where, you know, people don't really even want to have a child, you know, and the people that probably shouldn't be having have 10, and the ones that should have, you know, like we've just got an imbalance here of equality across what is good for society, which is a balance of all people.
Mm.
But this idea of chasing achievements, it's not what you've got, it's who you are. And that's that question. Who am I? Courageous, right? You know, what are the terms you use?
Yeah, like this is the thing. Like, I'm a strong believer in this. Like, you've like, okay, yeah. Chasing the cosmetic achievements of life. Like, yes, I used to be a very strong advocate of that. Just like, yes, you must have this, you must have that. Oh, isn't it shiny? Isn't it new? Cool. Yeah, everyone gather around. But like, it's like this. There are things you should, I think, as a person, you should work on individually. Like, basically, look, you can put this either first or like either which way around, like fitness and intellect, or you can switch it intellect and fitness. And then basically, yeah, your skill set. And when I mean your skill set, that's all of the skills you decide, like specialist skills you decide to put on your life on that side of things. No one, like there's not a lot of people which are kind of doing that. And the reason why I put fitness in, like sometimes it's the top one, is because you need to be like fit and well to do anything really, with regards to your intellect, with regards to those like core skills you want to add to yourself. If you don't have that, everything else doesn't really flow. And like, yeah.
Well, it's healthy body, healthy mind. It's a cliche that people have heard, and you are what you eat and all this stuff. But the problem is that these cliches is they couldn't be truer. You eat shit, you'll have shit thoughts. And that's the basic reality. We're understanding more and more scientifically that your body is constantly regenerating. You're growing and dying every second of every day. So whatever you feed yourself, you become. So if you feed yourself junk, your thoughts will become junk. Now that sounds really simple. It is, and it's very true. So fitness is incredibly important, because it doesn't matter what you study and what you search for knowledge-wise. If you're pouring junk into your body, you're not going to retain it. Your memory, you're going to end up with Alzheimer's. You'll end up with fatty tissue in your brain. You're not going to be that best version. So fitness, and they go side by side. You're not fueling your body with decent anything, then you're not going to have an intellect around past 50 to use anyway. And also the other side of it is an active body produces the hormones that we sort of require to grow and develop. So they go hand in hand.
There you go. Hey, but like, yeah, with that, it's like, yeah, I think people need to like work on that. And look, it kind of manifests in achievements, but like the whole thing is like, there's two ways of people seeing goals. Like I've seen the like finite and the infinite, and which one they decide to take, there are advantages to either which one, but one has, I'd say, a much more heavier toll than the other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think again, it's a societal thing. We look at who do we honor, or who do we put on a pedestal these days? You know, we're putting the guys who have got the finite. We're basically looking at guys who are all about the money. And again, money's not a bad thing. I'm not anti-money. But I would rather be surrounded by men of honor and integrity, men who are brave, courageous, peaceful, than I would be surrounded by a bunch of men with Ferraris. That's not taking away from a Ferrari or the people who own them in any way, shape, or form. But I just know that with the way the world is right now, I want a band of brothers who embody courage, bravery, humility, grace. You know, these are the things I want beside me. Yeah, but look, I'm 47. Maybe, you know, I'm out of touch with the men these days. But I can tell you one thing for sure. You just got to look out your window in most parts of the world and realize we're in some serious shit at the moment. And if we're going to thrive through this, which we can do, we can thrive through anything. Look at what we've created. We need to start looking at what we are, not what we can make, what we've got. When you start looking at what we are, like you said, what are we inside? Where do we need to grow? Start asking yourself these very simple questions, and there's enough information out there on this beautiful thing called the internet that you don't have to look far to start looking for answers.
Now, you know what? I would say this is the thing. When you say band of brothers, like, you know, integrity, courage, all of those things, I'd say they're like the world is looking for it too. There are many people looking for it too. If you just simply look at what has been popular in the cinema over the last few years, and you're like, oh, like, you know, like zombie, no, like just simply looking at superhero films and like stuff like this.
Yeah.
Like the world, like the movies reflect what the world hungers for. And I think the world is hungering for that right now. And I'm not too sure how it's going to manifest and how these people are going to start to like come into the world or be noticed, because there are.
We're going to stop looking outside. See, the thing is again, it's like the idea of a definition of a miracle. We want this big grand thing. Now we're looking at football players and we're looking at politicians and we're looking at wealthy businessmen as these people on the pedestal that are going to save us. Well, that's bullshit. We're going to save us. We are society. The only way we're going to fix the world is on a community level, right? So like in a cell, you don't fix it from the top down, you know, so you don't fix on the outside and work your way in. Start from the in and you work your set out. So as communities start to grow stronger, that becomes contagious. Yeah. So in my little street here, if I've got 100 families, if I work on, and I do it at the moment, I offer free breath work and meditation sessions to everyone in this neighborhood, free. Because if I bolster the men in this neighborhood and I bring them back to a place of courage and stability and peace, then I've got a community that's healthy. All it takes is two or three of those guys to then go and offer that same thing in the next community. That's how we change things. We don't wait for a politician to put a mandate in place and give money and bullshit like that. We can't rely on them. They're just human beings with a suit on. They're no different to any of us, except they speak funny. And they've been to a university, got a bit of paper. They're human beings full of failures, mistakes, weaknesses, just like you or I. And we expect them to fix this problem? No, we fix it as a number, as a community, as 50 people, 100 people. You know, on a cellular level, from a much smaller level, we start looking at our streets, our suburbs or counties, whatever, you know, you call them over there. We look on a much smaller level, you know, and stop looking for this grand saving grace, you know. No one's coming from the sky to save this. And what I mean by that is no one hugely above you. There's no Tony Stark in this story. Yeah, there is not. We are 100 of us together are a Tony Stark, for want of a silly analogy. You see what I mean? That's where our power will come from. But yet we're too busy looking up and out and waiting for someone else to roll in on a, you know, some sort of magic boat and like save everything. We're forgetting that we're the ones that are all powerful. And we don't know it because we don't challenge ourselves. It goes back to where we started. If we don't challenge ourselves, how do we know how capable we are? How do we know where our power is? How do we know what we're good at, what we're not? We don't, because we're basically sitting on the treadmill, going round and round and round, bitching and moaning. Poor me, life is too hard.
Yeah, very true. No, very true. Now, with that, what have been some of the things, like, okay, apart from like doing two stints in prison, like running borders, like having near-death experiences when you were young. What would you say have you been putting into place to sort of challenge yourself to sort of grow on a sort of day-to-day or like month-to-month basis yourself?
Yeah, I look at myself. I take it a little bit too far, but I look at the things I say no to. It's a very simple one to start. Whenever I say no, it's usually a sign of discomfort. Why did I say no? Did I not want to do it? What was the excuse I made up? So I look for the no's, because they're usually it's a very simple red flag. It's like, why? The other thing I look at, and a big telltale sign for me personally, is my interactions with other humans. When I go for a walk every day and I'm walking down the street, how many people did I say hello to? Now, this may seem small, but to me, this is a big sign of how connected I am to the world around me. I'm talking about community leaders and building up. Well, I should be able to walk tall down my street. I should be able to look people in the eye. Mm-hmm. They're all scared at the moment. Some have got masks on. Someone are not sure if they shouldn't have and should have. You know, when they see a dude walk down the street saying hi with a smile on his face, it's infectious. They do the same. Mm-hmm. I look at my interactions with my partner. You know, am I being the best support for her? Which at times at the moment, no, I'm not. So I don't go looking for these grand gestures anymore. I don't go looking to put a challenge. Like when I got back, I was going to surf ski the whole East Coast of Australia. And I was going to, you know, that's still that crusader in me. And then I realized that my biggest challenges and my biggest crusades were in my personal world every day. Have a look at myself. How do I interact? What am I giving? Am I giving with sincerity, or am I giving because I want to look good? So just really simple stuff, because when it's simple, it's easier to learn from. You know, you can listen to all the knowledge. You've got Anthony Robbins and all these great big guys out there, incredible. It's all so big, when the reality is the change is all so small, man. It's all really little things in a day. You can get an A4 piece of paper and you can write four or five things that happened during the day. Mm. You do that for a week, you're going to see very quickly where you're making the repetitive mistakes and go, why do I do that? That's not hard. You can change your life in as little as 7, 8, 9 minutes a day. But we've got people selling us books and programs and tools and methods, and it's all so bloody big. And, you know, you've got to spend $8,000 and all this shit, and that's all bullshit. It's not. We have to just take the action. Stop asking some guru and some mystic and someone to fly down on his fucking shiny horse or whatever it is and save the day, because we are ultimately the ones that can do all of it. We've got it all inside of us. And you know, if you listen to any of these guys, they will honestly tell you that they're no different to you or I. They just got up off their ass and did it.
What I would say is, if when we look at these people which have gone out there and done it, like, it's a case of, I think people fail to look at the sort of consistent actions they've took. Because like, one of the things I always say, and I've like, it's one, it's like when you realize it, you're like, oh no, that's a truism which just lives in the world, which you're kind of like, I didn't see it before, I see it now, damn it. Consistency.
Big time.
If you consistently do negative things, you'll consistently have negative things happen to you. You might get the random thing where something good comes out of it, but it's going to be generally negative. Do consistent positive things, consistently positive things will happen for you. Yeah, once again, you might get that random thing will happen, but it'll hold that line. And I think when it comes down to looking at people who we quote unquote deem succeed, and that could be like in any arena, people don't look at what they consistently do. It's like, what do they consistently do?
Yeah, you're right. What happens is we see them on the pedestal and we see that little persona and we think, oh, that person's got there because he's a good footballer or a good singer. What we don't see is 10, 15 years of every single day being up at 4 o'clock in the morning and honing their art. Yeah. And this is what we fail to see. That guy is not the greatest footballer because he was born that way. Nope. He's the greatest footballer because he got up every single day for 10 years and practiced kicking a ball against a wall. Tennis player, pick your sport, pick your art, pick your whatever. And we don't celebrate the consistency of the 10 years. We celebrate the gold medal.
Yeah.
We don't celebrate the person striving. Look at, you look at like African long distance runners. I mean, these guys train in the worst conditions, sometimes barefoot in the hellholes of the world, and then go on to win races all over the world. You want to see consistency. You want to understand how hard someone has to push to be the best. We don't celebrate that. We're too busy celebrating the end goal, the Lamborghini, the Ferrari. Again, so there's that. We want to see the shiny at the end. We don't want to see the work that that went into getting to it.
And like, this is the thing with regards to, because no one celebrates the consistency. And like, here's the thing, because people want to make things easier, they try to eliminate that consistency. What leads to that sort of success? What leads to that growth? And look, people like, oh, what do you mean? Like, yeah, look, doing like training for anything to be the most excellent version of yourself doesn't come, if you're like some prodigy, it might come easy, but if you don't have that sort of talent to it, you will work hard, you will go through pain, you will get to a point where you're sick of it, like to your bones. You will be like, oh, why am I doing this? Ask yourself questions. But if you come back to it, you like, oh yeah, there's part of you what truly loves what you're doing, but the price to pay is what comes from those positive actions, inconsistency. And it doesn't mean it's going to be pleasant. It doesn't mean it's going to be nice all the time. It's going to be hard. It's going to be painful. Yeah. And if you get rid of that, how do you expect to like find that next great person? How do you expect someone to thrive and grow? The person you cheer at the end of the day, the person you hold up high, will never exist, because you want to, like, people out there want to get rid of that consistency, that realm. Yeah,
they don't want to do it every day. They don't want to do the little things every day for 3 hours a day. They want the prize, but they don't want to do the work to get it. And that is because we've created a society that's too easy. And so I said, we go back to challenge, and people, you know, you said people might say, how dare you just quit your job. You see what I'm saying is, it's not really about the job. It's about this idea that you'll never know what you're capable of if you sit there bitching and moaning. So the job's an easy analogy, because it's beautiful, because the instant resistance is, how dare, you know what I mean? Anyone's going to go, are you mad? But it's a perfect example of what got you stuck, because tomorrow you'll be going down the pub and you'll be bitching about your job to your mates again. In 5 years' time, you'll be going to the same pub and you'll be bitching about the same job to your mates again. So you've really got a choice, and that's not Labor's problem, and it's not the Tory problem. It's not anyone's problem but yours. You create that with your choices.
Yeah, and like, this is the thing. Look, I've learned to sort of value the day, like each day you get, you get another day to where you can shape and make things develop, grow for yourself. You have a day where you might not want to do that. And like, you know what, that's well within your right. But when that last day comes and you're like, going, damn it, blah, blah, blah. You're like, look, you chose to do one thing or the other. And when that last day comes, you'll know in your heart of hearts if you maximized what you should have maximized or you slacked off. And that could be take the realms of many a thing. I should have been with my loved ones more. I should have should have followed this more. I should have traveled more. It's like, you won't be able to do that forever in a day, because that day will come. You know what I mean?
And the thing is, and it can be simple. It can be like, I should have put my phone down more.
Yeah.
I should have had that one or two less beers a night. Like, these don't have to be grand gestures. You know, the changes aren't massive. It can be really small, you know. And like you said, work is another one. You know, we're getting caught up in this slave mentality where people are just pushing themselves. And I don't think anyone realizes what for anymore. And I think the machine's broken on that side.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the whole thing is, you mentioned balance before. This is the thing. I don't know how, in some regards, some people will find that balance, if they don't sort of like look at themselves and sort of like, you know what I mean, take real sort of accountability for what they want to do, their actions. Like, look, you go, what do you mean taking accountability? That's when you do something wrong. It's like, no, like, I don't know. Take accountability for like doing something positive in your life. And like, you know what I mean? Helping people, like, you know, see that. celebrate that. And as you say, it doesn't have to be grand. It can be small. Like, you know what I mean? A few grams of sand can, like, yeah, throw off axis of many of things, you know? It's just like, hey.
Yeah, and it's the small things you do every day that make the changes. You know, like I said, sports is a really good example, because if you take, you know, a professional golfer, he stood in that one position and hit 500 balls a day. He didn't change much. He sat there and perfected that one swing, again and again. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to invent something new. You don't have to change society for the better. All you got to do is take that one thing that you do, a small thing. For me, I say to people, the best thing you do, get up early. You want the simplest thing you can do? Get up early. Winners don't get up after six. I mean, losers, winners don't get up. Winners are up at 5 a.m. You want to look, you go look at the most successful people in the world, you ask them one of their common secrets. You will not find one of them who gets up after six. All right? Go check the science on it. And it's weird. Don't ask me why. It's just part of the mentality of winners. They get up early. And that's winners, whether it be sports, music, because why? That's the special time when I guess you get to plan your day. You get to, you know, set your goals. You know, you get to ask yourself, how badly do I want this? You know, whether that's just being the best father in the world or whether that's being a professional golfer, I don't care. It doesn't matter. You know, what you strive for and what you deem success is your definition. Don't let society do that for you. Because I tell you what, I'd be really happy if, you know, 1 million men were surveyed and their top priority in life was to be the best dad. We'd have a very different place, wouldn't we? Yeah. If we took away a lot of the other priorities, which you ask a bunch of men what do they want, and the bulk of them, it's going to be a bunch of material stuff. It's going to be work-related or achievement-related. Now, how incredible would we have the next couple of generations if the bulk of men, their top priority was just to be the best damn father I can? Things would change very, very quickly.
I do believe so. I think it would get a little bit healthier. To say the least, just a tad. It's like, not like have some guy like kid like, you weren't there for me, dad. What the hell? It's like, okay. It's like, my dad was in my ball game. But yeah. I have to ask this. Now, with yourself, with your development, how things are going to unfold for you over the next few years? What would you like to unfold for yourself?
Well, look, the truth is I'd like to do more public speaking and more face-to-face work. The thing is, COVID sort of stripped that. So I started doing more retreats, which is, you know, 3-4 day boot camps, taking men out into the bush and basically breaking them.
It's like, take them out to the bush.
Yeah, break them. Take them out in the bush and break them, rebuild them. Rebuild them. Take them out and take them back to their fathers and, you know, get rid of all that junk that they carried from childhood and reset them. I want to work with as many people as possible. I prefer face-to-face purely because once you get face-to-face with someone and you can look them in the eyes, it's a much different world, you know? Like, they literally, you can't shake down that stare, especially with men. You can bring them to the challenge very quickly with the right look. You know what I mean? men are very easily bluffed into a challenge. Right? Women are smarter than that, but men, you can get them into a challenge. And, you know, when men are in a challenge, like I've just said, all of a sudden you start to see a different side of them. The guys, I've seen guys on boot camps in 45 degree heat who are double the weight, push twice as hard as anyone I've ever seen, push up hills with like 40 liters of water, 20 liter water in each hand. And the fittest are lying down the bottom of the hill almost in tears. Yeah, because this is the sort of stuff I live for, getting men to show what they're really worth.
You're a sick man. Look at you. He just raised his eyebrows. Like, yeah, I know.
I mean, for me, it was like I realized that was when I learned the most. You know, when I was back against the wall and pushed. Now, obviously, I'm not going to go throw people in African prison and try and prove it, but what I've understood and what I've been taught now is, you know, if you take food away from a man, you put him in a harsh environment, he's tested to a point he's never been tested before. He understands all of a sudden, I don't need to eat all the time. And I'm way more capable than I thought. And also, I can trust these men around me, because it's another thing that we've become seriously lacking in as men, especially, is connection. We don't have the brotherhood as strongly as we used to. You know what I mean? We don't rely on or trust men. We're not honest about how we feel with men. You know, most men talking is around a beer or a sport. There's not a lot of that, you know, I'm struggling as a father, I'm struggling as a partner. It's always bitch about the partner or bitch about the kids, not I'm going to, you know what I mean? And that's something else we need to look at.
I would say some men, how can I put it? They kind of are trapped within their sort of social status, if you get what I mean. Look, the reason why I say this, I've seen a number of guys which I've been like, yeah, this is how the world, like, this is what I've put out in the world, and this is how I want the world to see me. And like, they've struggled emotionally and they've struggled financially, and like, basically life has put them through the ringer, but they, like, you know what, they'll never actually tell, and they go through this sort of quiet suffering, which, like, when it builds and builds and builds, I've seen some guys be broken, and I've seen some guys, like, weather the storm and come out on the other side. But then there are the ones which weather the storm, but in complete utter silence. And then when they tell you, like, months after the fact, it's like, why didn't you say something? I could have given you a helping hand, eased your burden. But it's like, I think many a guy is taught to, you must stay on this island of pain by yourself. You're
that's been generationally passed down, that it's tough. That definition of strength is for you to do it alone. Mm. And I tried that. And, you know, the reality was I thought it was the right way. But what I've started to find out is, very quickly, we're tribal. You know, it doesn't matter where in the world you're from. At some point, we were part of a small community. We were all tribal. And we all relied on each other with our special skills. One guy was stronger. One guy was faster. One guy could see further. One guy could smell better. And so they hunted as a party. Now, we don't do anything like that anymore. We're trying to be solo ships in a storm.
Yeah, but I would say this is something which I would say stems definitely from more of a 21st century thing. Because, like, okay, yeah, as you say, communities were smaller, and like, basically you had to rely on them. So with that sort of smaller group, conversations would have most really flown more naturally, like in a sort of different setting. And like, as guys, especially in the 20th century, 21st century, where it's definitely gone down the route of, like, you work in this place, you work in the office, and like, basically, I would say most probably not so much the blue collar work, where like, you still have that sort of that group mentality and stuff like that. But blue collar work is now gone further and further away from the West, like the Western world, if you get what I mean. Now it's more like white collar work, where it's not so much you have that group camaraderie. Because look, when I was living in Cambridge, 2018, like, I was working in an industrial laundrette. My normal stick is I do telephone sales on the phone, talking to people around the world. Blah, 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 blah. Would you like to buy this? Would you like to buy that? And right, in Cambridge, I was working in an industrial laundrette called Swiss Laundry. And that was like the blue collar work of blue collar work. But there was like this camaraderie, this sort of like team bond you had, which was completely different to sort of like, yeah, the sort of white collar work, if you get what I mean. And it was like, yeah, long days, painful, but yeah, the amount of stuff that the amount of shit we talked about, from just general BS to like, yeah, like world changing things. And I'll tell you this now, if you want to get a strict immigration policy, speak to anyone who's like come from abroad and working in any type of like blue collar factory, and you will get the real extreme stuff come out. You're like, okay, it's like, no, it's like, you're just like a politician, like, calm down, easy, calm down. But yeah, it's a much different vibe. And I don't think you get that in many of sort of jobs you get today, if you know what I mean.
No, you're right. And also, we've become incredibly competitive too. So, like, you're right, there's very few jobs now where everyone's not sort of dog eat dog. You know, everyone's scared of what to say, how to say it. And so, people, the last thing someone's going to come to work and say is, I'm feeling sad, or I'm feeling shit, I'm angry. You know what I mean? No one's going to be honest about how they feel, because then that could then be used against them. Mm. I think it's another thing we've bred in our society is this idea that you can't really trust people with who you are. Authenticity, or, you know, not the authentic human, is not necessarily celebrated. You know, the guy who gets up and says, I'm feeling sad because, you know, I'm feeling disconnected from my partner or my kids aren't doing great at school, is not the guy that's actually applauded, is he? He's weak. That's what we define as weakness. Instead, he's the dude with the superpower. He's the one who's actually just being himself. If we saw more of that, we'd see a lot less alcohol abuse, a lot less drug abuse, a lot less suicide, a lot less mental health issues. You know, when people bottle this stuff up, when they can't be who they truly are, when they can't speak what they truly need to, that's when we end up with a prescription drug problem. And so we end up with drug problems. You know, we're telling people what to be and telling them how to be. False set of rules. We're not encouraging people to be who they really are.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Very true. You just got me in this like loop now. Just like, okay, yeah. I'm just mulling over it, people, mulling over it. No. Now. No. Now, with that, with like trying to find your authentic self, like trying to be that true person, like, what would you see? Like, what would you say? I know everybody's different and everything like that, but what would you say, like maybe a ingredient might be there for everyone they can sort of latch on to?
Oh, it's one word, but it's not an easy one. That's courage.
Because
that's what it requires. Well, look, there's two stages to this. The first stage is self-honesty.
Yeah.
Right? Because the truth is you've got to learn how to see through your own bullshit. Because until you can speak anything, you need to deal with what's going on up here. And if you're convincing yourself that something is that really isn't,
yeah,
well, then you can't speak it. So your first step is always self-honesty. Is, and that's the reality that are you, who's holding me back? I am. You know, am I manipulative at times? Yes, I am. Do I lie? Yes. You know, go through all these things and strip away all these things that we deem negative and go, yes, and own them. Self-honesty. Did I do my best today? No, not even close. You know, did I backstab that colleague to try and make myself look better in front of the boss? Yeah, shit, I did. I'm not proud of it. These moments of self-honesty strip away the weight that you're carrying, which is this shame and guilt of the things that you've done wrong. And then it's courage. Because then you can talk about it and say, you know, I'm not proud of myself. You know, talk to a mate and say, I'm not proud of myself. You know, I said something today at work. I just shouldn't have done that. Yeah. So self-honesty is stop lying to yourself. Because I don't care if you lie to other people, not that I encourage it, but the biggest lies, the lies that are doing society and ourselves the most damage are the ones that we live with up here. I am doing my best, when quite clearly we're not. I am a good partner, when quite clearly you spend half your time down the pub. I am a good father, when the truth is you sit on your phone constantly when your kids are in the room. Yeah, when you start unraveling your own bullshit, because you don't, I can't tell you, because if I tell you that, you're going to go, how dare you? How dare you step into my world? You have to start telling yourself, when you strip away that denial and you see that self-honesty, then you find the courage to go to a group, you know, a group, let's say it's a community group, and say, you know what, I'm not being the best that I can. I'm failing at this. That's a fucking superpower. That's authenticity. That's the moment that you get to choose. Now you've been honest, you own that shit. Now you can actually go, what do I do to be the good dad? What do I do to be better at my job? What do I do to take my boss's job? Not by kissing his ass or by backstabbing anyone, but by going and learning new skills I need to so that I can be promoted. Yeah, but you've got to have those first two steps, the seeds.
I'm liking that. I'm liking that a lot. Courage. And yeah, not from a stupid Apple like presentation when they just remove a like little dongle or something like that. Courage, no, stop it. It's like, yeah, no. Very true, very true. So with this, like, how have you been kind of spreading the word? Like, you like podcasts here, how have you been getting that word? Yeah,
look, for me, a lot of podcasts. I mean, I'm still learning how to share my experiences. There's a lot of it in there. And so for me, the best way is to talk to people like you. You ask me questions, I look at things a different way, I learn about myself. The more I learn about myself from your eyes, the better I am at helping people. Because if I just run around seeing my life through my eyes, I'm just a storyteller. Whereas when you ask me questions and when I see how you react, I can get this ability to go, you know what? I've got this something that I can share with people that might inspire someone.
Mm.
So podcasts, I mean, of course, I'm on social media, you know, under either my name or under Catalyst Coaching, which is my business, which is really just me and my whiteboard behind me here. Yeah, I do things simply. I'm not going to move into a world driven by ego. I pride myself on getting results for people I work with, not on flashy looking technology. And yeah, so, and it's probably going to cost me in the long run because the world loves flashy technology and shiny looking things, and I should have a collared shirt on. But the truth is, for me, no.
Gap hoodie. There you go. I said, don't worry about it. I've got a Gap hoodie on. It's like, yeah, there you go. No. So, okay. Now, yeah. So how many podcasts have you been on recently, I would say?
Oh, in the last few weeks, I've done about 15.
Thank God.
Yeah. And now I've wound it back a little bit. Look, I've done more in these last few weeks than I have at any other point, and I'll continue to do them until I think I'm repeating myself. While I continue to learn and grow, and while I continue to meet new and sort of different hosts who ask me different questions and get me looking at myself differently, because in my interacting with you, I'm learning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm learning about how I speak. I'm learning about how I see my story. The fact that I used, the fact that I wasted years, the fact that I said that out loud, I'll go back and I'll mull over that. And I have to ask myself, why would I have said that? You know, or why would I think they're wasted when I know they're not? And I know it's attached to my kids being stuck in Africa. So for me, it's all about learning. My life now is about giving. And I know a lot of people will go, oh, that's just hippie bullshit. And the truth is, you know, that's what I'm here for. My life was a series of blessings, and they were quite tough at times. But right now, I have a responsibility, I think, to my kids and to the world to give, because I think there's enough people taking.
I hear that. I like that a lot. Now, here we go. This is the question now. The one, the only question. Now, take one of your favorite films. You just think of like that film. What would that film be?
It depends. The Watchmen's one of my favorite films, but it wouldn't be that one. I mean, for me, it's going to be something like Saving Private Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Goody, goody, goody. Okay. Now, taking Saving Private Ryan, right? Take the whole cast of Saving Private Ryan, except one member of the cast, and now replace the whole cast of Saving Private Ryan with Muppets, and you have one human cast member. Which would be the human cast member, and like which would be the Muppet?
Tom Hanks would be. You'd keep Tom Hanks just because it'd be so funny to see him surrounded by Muppets. Can you see him like trouncing across the English, the country, the French countryside? Tom Hanks with like all these Muppets falling across. Oh shit, man! I thought you were going to ask me what's your favorite ice cream or something. Like I get that one a lot, but not replace all of them with Muppets. I'm going to use that. I'm sorry. That is, I'm going to do that to someone because that one. I picked a good movie to do it as well. I grew up from Muppets, and I could just see him like, oh.
So yeah, you sick son of a bitch. Like you would just have some poor Muppet like walking like on the
blind
beach
to pieces.
Like
D Day
picking up his felt arm, walking back. Like going, yeah. Just like yeah. Like yeah.
Oh dear. Oh thank you for that.
No worries.
I hope anyone, when they listen to that, can actually picture that movie and Tom Hanks with like what, seven or eight like Muppets behind him trouncing along over the French countryside.
So like that emotional scene, when Ryan's there at the end with his family,
yeah.
I have to ask, which Muppet would be Ryan? Which Muppet? That sounds bad when you go Muppet. Like, you know, like over in the
UK,
it's like, oh, you
Muppet. Yeah, I know, Muppet. Yeah, you Muppet, exactly. Who would it, which Muppet would it be? to make it funniest, Cookie Monster.
Cookie Monster does like, tell me I did enough. Tell me I did enough. Yeah. Oh, yum, yum, yum.
Shit. I'll never be able to watch that movie the same again. You do realize that's like one of my top five favorite movies. I almost want to watch it now just so I can see Muppets.
Scores of Muppets just blown up. Felt.
They're germ up and felt flying everywhere.
Yeah, felt and stuffing.
There you go. And now I'm going to have to explain to my partner, if I ever watch that movie with her, why I'm in stitches on the floor watching a movie with dead men everywhere and I'm laughing. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, you see, you're going to have to remember me.
You know what? If I ever sit and watch that with my boys when they're older, I'm not going to forget that. Like, this is the thing. This is a memory you've created that will never fade. I will see Tom Hanks giving that speech in the church to a whole bunch of Muppets surrounding.
So which would be the Vin Diesel character? Animal, maybe? Who knows?
Oh, yeah. Oh, see, now I'm going to actually have to name a Muppet for every cast member. I'm going to watch it. I hope my partner can't hear this. She's probably trying to sleep in the next room and she's here. All she can hear is the word Muppet being...
What's going on?
I thought he was doing a podcast about personal development and business coaching. yelling out Muppet. Oh, well, I'll explain that. You'll explain it tomorrow.
What can I say? Yeah, I don't come at podcasts any ordinary way. It's out there, baby, out there. Oh, on that happy note, can you tell the people how they can find you out on the world wide webs?
Ooh. All right. Yes, God. Well, look, I'm social media, Instagram, Facebook, Catalyst Coaching Australia. It's that simple. Don't have a website. Don't believe in them. I've got a YouTube channel, Aaron Young Catalyst. All my content, what little that I've done is up there. Oh, look, I'm not into this mass production of junk. I'll get back into it a little bit now. I prefer to do real, and this is real, and that's why I like the Opportunity Podcast. And what I said to you in the beginning, I don't want to prepare. I want you to throw me curveballs. I want it to be new, because what you realize is everything you've said to me is who I am.
Yeah,
I haven't created it. I've not sat there and contrived a story and made myself look like. It's just what you see is what you get. I think we need more of that. Sincere. To me, it's genuine.
I hear you. I think you should do a podcast yourself. Like, the reason why I say this, like, you say, you go, but like, I think you would. No. Like, this is the reason why. Because I believe it'll help with your personal development a lot more as well. Because look, it's like one of those things, like, yes, personal development should be a never ending game until the day you breathe your final breath. Like, and anyone who goes, no, you get to a point and no. It's like, look, like, who you are at the age of like 20 to who you are at the age of like 80 should be considerably different. And if you're not different, you have not lived or experienced like the joys and pains of life in any sort of deep and meaningful way. And if that's the case, you've been dead for a very long time. It's just like death is just like caught up and just went. By the way, you've been dead since 1980 something. Off you go. You've lived a piss poor life. Bye bye. But I think with regards to that, I think it would help. And like, look, it's not sort of just bashing out like content to bash out content's sake. It's that coming out with authentic like information material for, and it doesn't necessarily have to be for audience, but for yourself to use some like type of self-reflective material and like help people get a little bit deeper into maybe your mindset and like philosophies, which they can use on a sort of day-to-day basis. Like not leaving poor people like carrying gallons of water at the base of some hill in the bush. Like, oh, don't lie there. There's crocodiles. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, look, you're probably right. And it's something I've been told to write a book, and I have been told a couple of times that I should do a podcast. And I think I can't say no, because remember, I just pulled a face and I went, ah, like, that's an instant red flag. Because if I go no, that's what I've got to look at. Yeah, and that's a perfect example of what I do in my life. Because when you go, ah, or you're really anti something,
yeah,
that's like, that's a red flag. It's like, have a look. Why would you be so anti it that you wouldn't even stop for 1 second to consider it in a positive light? Probably because there's something behind that you don't want to face. And so that's a simple, it's a simple example of me using my own tool. That's what we need to do in our lives. Have a look at our no's. Have a look at the, no, I refuse to. Have a look at the things we argue against. Have a look at the things we fight about. And then go, why am I doing, why? Why do I choose this battle? Why do I choose that no? Why do I, you know, and underneath that, sometimes some very simple answers.
Indeed. Indeed. Ah, absolutely. Ah, got to say, Aaron, thank you for coming on today. You have been a star, a superstar. No way Muppet-like in any fashion. There you go.
Thank you, my friend. Look, I haven't done a podcast this fun, and I hope I get to do more of them, because it is a completely different journey when you get to have a laugh. I think it puts a mind at ease as well, and completely just lets it flow. You're in flow. I call it, you know, you're more likely to let God work through you or the universe work through you when you're in a relaxed state like this. Yeah.
There you
go. Took no drugs, no alcohol. All it took was just a little bit of, I think, just kindness and compassion, which is, I think, what pours from you.
Oh, you're far too kind. Look, as I say, yeah, you'll get a check through the post sometime. Sometime. Don't hold me to this, people. Sometime in the future. Thank you. Is that gone? Like, oh. After that, my friends, my life warriors, my ego has been properly stoked. And now I can face the day like godlike and proud. I like to say, yeah, for all you friends, my life warriors who are still with us right now, thank you for sticking with us. Thank you for listening to our conversation. Like, yeah, please go out. Follow Aaron like on all of his social medias, wherever he might be. And yeah, if you can put it down that, yes, start a podcast or anything like that in the description, yeah, that'd be great. But let me just say this to you, my friends, my life warriors, stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic, be all the positive bees you can be in this world and then some. Oh yeah, have a good day, guys. Yes, peace. Ah. And wait for it. We are.